Okay, so tonight we're picking up a koan out of the Mumon Kan, case number 27. And the title of the case is Neither Mind Nor Buddha. And I'll start by reading just the case. So it goes like this. A monk once asked Nansen, "Is there any dharma which no master has ever taught?" Nansen replied, "Yes, there is." The monk asked, "What is this dharma that has not ever been taught?" Nansen said, "It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not things." So this is a very wonderful and, I would say, to a large degree, classic koan, in that there's some paradoxical nature to it. Nansen is saying some things that go counter to what I'm sure the monk and Nansen both know are standard Buddhist teachings, including mind is Buddha. And it is very puzzling. What is he pointing at? And what is this it? He said, "It is not mind." What is he referring to? It's a really classic, wonderful koan in the Mumon Kan. So, how would we approach this? Something that we humans are superbly well equipped to do and have brought to an extremely high art, something that surpasses any other animal on earth, is the ability to understand and ascribe to various things, events, meaning. Now we take this really far because it's said in many books that have been written about it. I remember one book from many years ago that I read in college, Man's Search for Meaning. And this was written by a person who was a psychiatrist. And he actually survived the Holocaust. And it was about how important it was to find meaning, even in the midst of this hellish situation. It's very important for people to find meaning, to see meaning in things. This is something that animals essentially don't really do. Maybe the higher forms of animal life are able to see things in a symbolic way, and they don't have to totally see the particularities of something to know right away that's a tiger, that's a lion. So they have the rudiments of this ability we have to see meaning. Now, we go further than just seeing meaning. We make it extremely important. It's almost impossible for us in many situations to perceive something without immediately ascribing meaning to it, whether it is something we want or don't want, whether it will further our goal or not further our goal, whether it's good or bad, whether we like it or don't like it. What it means about the person we're talking to, what it means about the circumstances of life, what it means about us, what it says about us. We get really hung up on this point. Now, children don't do it early in their life, but they quickly learn to look for meaning. And around the point in time where meaning enters kind of automatically, the child's fresh, bright awareness of the world starts to dull down. And then we become adults and we're addicted to meaning. What else is there than meaning? Well, what is this meaning referring to? what is it that's triggering this search for, this identification of, this consideration of meaning? There has to be something there. There has to be some trigger for it. And that we can call sensation, the actual world. So the actual world doesn't come with meaning attached to it. That's something we add to it. So we perceive something, some sensory experience, and then immediately we ascribe meaning to it, and then we're off and running. So we only need to dimly perceive the sensation of something to then go into the real important aspect of it, which is what it means. And what form will this take? Well, oftentimes we don't really listen well. We don't really see clearly. We don't really hear things as they're actually spoken or occur, because there's a leap into meaning. And we hold to the meaning and forget the actuality of whatever it was that triggered our ascribing that meaning. So now we come to this wonderful practice called Zazen. And if you were to look at what fundamentally Zazen is, it is a movement from meaning to sensation. It's exactly the opposite. This is the implication of the word mindfulness. So to be mindful is to pay close attention. Now, when you pay close attention, you begin to become aware of the sheer sensation of the moment, a sound, an emotion, a feeling, an idea, a thought. That happens first. Then if we observe, we can see how there's a movement, deeply ingrained, habitual, something we really make important, and that is supported by our culture, into meaning. What does this mean? What does it mean about me? What does it say about me? What does it mean in terms of my whole circumstance? And Zazen is moving in the other direction. So it starts with the actuality, and if it does not retreat into meaning, it stays with the actuality. After some period of time, and with some guidance, one begins to notice something about these sensations, or what we might call the actual world, or reality. We notice that it appears. This is a key turning point in our Zazen practice, the beginning of noticing that. So if we simply stayed with the sensations, that would really be no different than doing mantra practice, staring at a candle flame. Contemplating a sound, om. That is a kind of Zazen, but it kind of has a limit. For one thing, it's stuck on the object. And in doing that, excludes a lot of other things and can become oppositional. I'm going to push away these thoughts and feelings and just stare at this candle. And furthermore, it doesn't necessarily end the sense of standing apart from the object. There's nothing intrinsic to staring at a candle itself that will necessarily loosen one's sense that one is perceiving a candle. Now you can say it's not a candle, it's just this. I used to call it a candle, but now it's just this ever-changing, can't put a name on it. But when we begin to notice, simply notice, that the candle is present, appears. This is something that is beyond candle. It's not restricted to candle. It's not delimited by candle. Neither is it restricted to a mantra or the sound mu or the feeling of your breath or the counting of your breath. It's not restricted. We begin to peer into something that is inherent to these things but not delimited by them. It's a critical step in Zazen. And we learn to do it little by little. If we have proper instruction and we enjoy and do Zazen devotedly and intently. So let's go back to this koan. And so the monk, this monk happens to be Hyakujo Nehan. Hyakujo Nehan was a student of Hyakujo Ekai, the famous Hyakujo of Hyakujo Fox. Hyakujo's fox was the second koan in the Mumonkan. And this Hyakujo apparently also went to Nansen. So Hyakujo Ekai, the famous Hyakujo, and Nansen were contemporaries. And this monk went to Nansen and asked, is there any dharma, and that's capitalized, by the way, so it means teaching or truth, essential truth. Is there any dharma which no master has ever taught? Sort of reminiscent of another koan in the Mumonkan, where the monk Myo is chasing Weineng and has an enlightenment through some words told to him by Weineng, and then says, is there anything secret that you haven't told me? Weineng says, there is no secret. What secret is within you? This monk is kind of asking a question like that. You know, perhaps in his mind he's saying, I've been a monk for a long time. I've been a student of the great Hyakujo Ekai, but there's still something missing, something lacking. Maybe there's some dharma that Nansen knows that no other master does. Perhaps that's his meaning. Is there any dharma which no master has ever taught? Maybe this monk is pretty advanced and he's probing Nansen. How might you answer this question? Maybe he's setting a trap, trying to get Nansen to give a teaching that maybe isn't so unique. Nansen, wonderful master that he is, replied immediately. He didn't avoid the hook. He swallowed it, took it hook, line, and sinker, so to speak. He said, yes, there is. There's an exclamation mark in this translation. And he's now drawing this monk in, and the monk said, well, what is this dharma that has not ever been taught? And then Nansen unloads it. This is a tremendous, cataclysmic statement. It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not things. An elegant way to put this. He is showing forth something that isn't taught. This is not mind, not Buddha, not things. What is he pointing at? Now this monk is looking for some kind of dharma, something that can be taught, perhaps never was taught, but could be taught. He's looking for meaning. Something that will point him in the right direction, something that will unburden him of his sense of lacking, something that will awaken him to some beauteous state of mind. He's seeking for something very special. And Nansen is taking that away totally. So everything that perhaps this monk has been taught, Nansen is taking away. It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It is not things. What is he pointing at? Remember, we said that if you were to stare at a candle intently and not stop with the subject-object duality of I am staring at a candle, even if you can do that for hours on end without a second thought, if you at once begin to notice that the candle as it is appears, you're beginning to enter a realm that is not delimited by the candle. You can say exactly the same thing about a shoe, about a bird's tweeting, about the sound of a car driving down the street. There's some commonality there. What is this it? Let's look at the commentary. The commentary is very brief. And it's pretty classic for Mumon, and I'll read it to you. It's, Nansen was just asked a question and used up all his resources at once. How feeble and awkward. It's that wonderful habit of Mumon to praise through condemnation, as it's put. Now he says here, Nansen was just asked a question. And he used up all his resources. Just a simple question, you know, obvious question. So some teaching that I haven't heard yet. And he used up all his resources at once. He totally laid it out for this monk, pointed straight at it. He used up all his resources. Now, what does he mean, feeble and awkward? If there's something that can't be put into meaning, that can't be delimited by any concept, and every word is a concept, every word is a picture of something else, then if you use words to express it, it's going to be, with quotes around it, feeble and awkward, although Nansen does this with great skill. So let's look at the verse, because this is going to help us too. So Mumon's verse on this koan is this. Too kind, Nansen lost his value. What an effect no words have. Even if the blue ocean should change, it will never be communicated to you. Too kind. Nonsense being too kind here. He's even beginning to move his lips, beginning to open his mouth. He can't escape the trap of concepts and words and meanings. But he's being kind. Were he to say nothing at all, how could he teach this monk? Were he to slap the monk or strike the monk, certainly that's a kind of teaching. Perhaps he saw that this monk wasn't going to respond to that kind of indication of this it, wasn't ready for that, and therefore it'd be a waste, and the monk might take it the wrong way. So he used words in a very skillful way. So Mumon says, too kind, Nansen lost his value. What an effect no words have. What an effect, and there's an exclamation mark after this. What an effect. So Mumon is pointing out, if you get this, it has an effect. There's a sudden getting it. These are no words. It's not mind. It's not Buddha. It's not things. It's not chairs. It's not emotions. It's not meanings. It's not smells, it's not sounds. What does he mean by that? Now, the converse is not true. You can say that Smells are it. Sounds are it. Feelings are it. Meanings are it. Remember this three sides of something that humans are good at. One is to take something and ascribe meaning to it and then get hung up on the meaning and follow that out with meaning upon meaning, thought upon thought, the slippery slope, and then we've created this whole world with all of its wonderful things and conflict. It's important. It's not to be looked down upon. We are the pinnacle of creation at this point, as far as we know, on Earth, for better or worse. So we got that one side. Then we have the actual thing to which we're ascribing meaning, which is concrete, real. It's a sensation. It's in this moment. And then, via our wonderful practice of Zazen, which has peeled the meaning off, enabled us to stay with the actuality, and then begin to appreciate its fact. Its fact means that it appears. It's important this word appears. Its fact is plain and neutral, one might say, but appears as intimate. Things aren't if they aren't to me. The real world has to appear to me. Otherwise, it's an idea for me. And this is another thing that is uncovered in our Zazen, that everything we experience is intimate. It appears. Where does it appear? Where is the location of appearance? In my deepest center. Can't be anywhere else. If it wasn't, it wouldn't appear. Are we beginning to have a better idea of this it? So he says, what an effect no words have. Even if the blue ocean should change. So let's take something vast, something immense. Let's say the blue ocean changed to red. Some extraordinary thing happened, some cataclysmic event happened. No matter what it would be, it will never be communicated to you. This is also an answer to this monk's question, is there some dharma that has not ever been taught? Even if the blue ocean should change, it will never be communicated to you. Remember now, it is most intimate. This it is most intimate. Now to find it is not a long journey. It doesn't take multiple steps. It doesn't take great understanding, wisdom, learning all the canons of Buddhism, reading all the sutras, reading all the books on Zen, and traveling to meet one Zen teacher after another, one master after another. It doesn't require that. It's very direct, very immediate, because it's not anywhere else but where you are. You just need to look in its direction. So the direction that we ordinarily look when something occurs in our sensory field is towards what's its name, what does it mean, is it threatening to me or is it helpful to me? That's the immediate movement. The minute we make that movement, we can't make the other movement. The other movement gets lost. It's there, but we don't see it. This is the important thing. This is what Mumon means in a subtle way. Even if the blue ocean should change, it will never be communicated to you. So it's a very wonderful koan, and we will end there tonight.